Can I just jump in there real quick? And also, while he was in jail, there were people signing on and off of his instant messenger.
Oh, yeah.
And we're his friends. We're talking with his family and his attorney the whole time. And his various, like, IM names, there's people logging on and off, pretending to be him. If they're not pretending to be him, they're threatening other people that are trying to instant message him. And so we knew, like, this was happening before he even got arrested, before the raid. But it intensified extremely while he was in jail. Like, on a regular basis, 12 times a day, there was various people, like, logging on to all of his IM names. I think at ICQ, they were logging on to that, too, and various different things.
So, just to clarify, they were stealing your IM names somehow.
Yeah, passwords.
Oh, they had passwords.
And they had, at one point, one of our friends in San Diego, James, I know he tried IMing them, and the message, the only message he got back was, "You're next." And that was...
Do you think, who do you suspect was IMing?
It was the cops. Yeah. Who else could it be?
No. I suspect it was people working for the FBI. I mean, because this started happening a few months before the raid. I had found out that they had begun packeting my DSL line. What that is basically is that they monitored all incoming and outgoing, data going through my internet connection. And I had found this out like a few months before the raid, and they were doing this for a while. And then they started coming onto my instant messenger accounts and into my email accounts, and they started locking me out. And they started commandering those accounts and started talking to people. And it was obvious that they were packaging me, because when they would IM people, they would use the same words I used. They would talk the same way like I would talk. I mean, you can tell that they were paying very close attention to my conversations and the way I would communicate with people. And they would try to, you know, pretty much like impersonate me and try to act like as if they were me. And they would IM people. And, you know, and various people I talked to actually thought it was me, because, I mean, they talk just like me. I mean, they had been monitoring me for a while, and they had paid very close attention to the way, you know, I said things online. And they just, okay.
So just to be clear, this was after they seized the computers at your house.
They started doing this before they seized the computers.
So somehow they were able to get a hold of passwords for your instant messenger names prior to coming to your house and taking your computers.
Yeah. I remember talking to Sherman, like a fake Sherman. And then about just randomly, like, some event going on or a show. And then I would actually talk to him, like, the next day. And it was like I didn't talk to him because he didn't know what I was talking about. Because it wasn't him that I had talked to the day before. And we just became used to it, like, the people that talked to him regularly. So we started, like, playing these. I remember, like, we would play, like, these silly games, like ask questions to each other about things that we would only know back and forth, because it became funny at one point, just because it was happening repeatedly. And then it was horrible yet funny at the same time, that they were doing it while he was in jail, like we didn't know. And we know he's in jail, and his name is just popping on and off and on and off, like instant messenger, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so your listeners are listening to killradio.org, and this is Agitrop, and we're talking to Sherman Austin about the recent court decision to send him to prison for 1 year, starting September 1st, right? September 3rd. I'm going to take a music break and then come back, and we'll keep talking about this, all right?
Cool.
Let me ask a question. As I understand it, this is some MC shit, right? So if y'all with me, nod your heads. Order the MCs, nod your heads. Life and death. Manifesto. This is what we want to see happen. For my people still breaking, graph writing and rapping. I rock the mic right and exact, my life's my sacrifice. Take my mic and I'm like a Chinese man with no rice. Oh yeah, we flipping through the pages of time. Divine design, like Vaseline on the faces of black children, we shining.
deeper than petroleum jelly. Me in the air like conversations on cellies, and just appear like stretch marks on bellies. After giving birth, you had to let go and plan for life, the manifesto. It comes to be because I said so. Keep pushing, I got the cushion for the seed of your soul. Back in the day, they stole our smile, so we clothed our teeth in gold and we frontin'. From nigga to kid to son to god, it's wild. Depending on labels for man, woman, and child, my style just is all that's seen and all that's heard. God gave us music, so we pray without words. So I tap me in constant meditation like a monk, while he speaks in tongues to get your intellect drunk. Yo, we bound to take over the 90% of the brain that you ain't using. To us, it's life or death, we keep you choosing.
Every shot I ain't sleep, every goodbye ain't gone. Ain't no rest for the weary or forever is on. The manifesto establishes some hip-hop order, moving upon the face of the water like reflection.
Yo, all the real MCs, meet me outside, so we can decide how we gonna change the tide. Like the moon, we on the earth, taking a ride around the sun. My son, we only just begun, and the journey's far from done. We on mission, what your brain gone fishing like Walter Mosley? There's an MC that could hold me, supposedly. No one could come close to me, only the family really know me. Hip-hop's last hope, like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Through your tunnel vision, I'm shining light like a train, coming out like earthworms when it rains. Bringing it like the CIA be bringing in crack cocaine, bailing out of planes with the George Bush connections. I push reflection like I'm selling ism, like a dealer building the system. Supply and the demand, it's all capitalism. Niggas don't sell crack cause they like to see black smoke. Niggas sell crack cause they broke. My battle lyrics get conscious minds provoked and ghetto passes revoked. Cause we surrounded by the evil. We know that the people's minds is feeble, they believe in it. Even if it don't make sense, just making dollars it. Don't take a scholar to see what's going on around you. Either you with it or you ain't, is what it comes down to. Have you forgotten? We picking 100% designer name brand cotton. They still plotting. My third eye is steady watching.
Every shot I ain't seen, every goodbye ain't gone. Ain't no rest for the weary or forever is on. The manifesto establishes a hip hop order, moving upon the face of the water like reflection.
See, that's what I'm talking about. We need a school of man. We need to really break it down because these heads, they don't know what they're talking about.
From open mics to solutions, I got a collage of answers. And a 10-point program, just like the Black Panthers. One, first respect yourself as an artist. If you don't respect yourself, then your rhymes is garbage. Two, make sure your crew is as tight as you. Cause when them niggas falling off, they gonna bring you down too. Three, understand the meaning of MC. The power to move the crowd like Moses split the seas. Four, know your shit and don't ever be bluffing. If you don't know what the words mean, then your rhymes mean nothing. Five, kick facts in the raps, curse with clarity. What's a curse? Language is immersed in vulgarity. Six, we gonna fix industrial politics. Shit, they made an art form out of riding dicks. Seven, we soldiers for God needing new recruits. So if you rhyming for the loop, then use a prostitute. But eight, acknowledge that you need food on your plate. In order to say your grace, make sure your business is straight. Nine, rebuilding black minds with intelligence. And when you freestyle, keep the subject matter relevant. 10, every MC, grab a pen and write some conscious lyrics to tell the children. I'll say it again, every MC, find you a pen and drop some conscious shit for our children, the manifesto.
All right, we're back. This is killradio.org. And so why don't we pick up and continue the story, Sherman? So you got, after you got arrested after being in New York, that's when the charges came down. And so maybe bring us up to the present after that time.
Yeah. Oh, actually, the prosecution, they dropped it. They decided not to indict me. And then it was 6 months later when the charges came back. During those 6 months, I had the website up, and I was pretty much, you know, just going back to what I was doing, continuing my political work within the community, and I was, you know, working on Race of Fists, and that site, you know, developed a lot since then. It grew. A lot more people started knowing about it and coming to the website, and it developed more into of a direct action network with you know, different chapters in different areas, not just around the U.S. but around the world, of different organizations and affinity groups and, you know, just groups of people. So it wasn't just a website anymore. It was an actual direct action network that could be used to organize and coordinate events and different types of actions with a capacity that we can do this type of thing in different areas, you know, around the U.S. and around the world. So overall, it just became more of a resource and more of a tool. So then 6 months later, the prosecutors contacted my lawyer, and they told them they didn't really find anything on my computers to get me for, but they didn't want to let me off the hook. So what they proceeded to do was offer me a pre-indictment binding plea, which was offer me a plea bargain without indicting me, like before indicting me, offered me a plea bargain. And what that was 1 month in jail and 5 months in a halfway house in community confinement. And at first I rejected it. I wanted to go to trial because at first I wanted them, if they were going to bring anything against me, why couldn't they indict me? Why couldn't they just go through the procedure as normal? I was assuming because they wanted to keep it pretty quiet, keep it under the table so there wasn't going to be that much media attention about it and just get it over with and get their conviction. So at first I wanted to go to trial. And my lawyer told me that, you know, if I wanted to go to trial, the choice is, you know, pretty much up to me. At that point, we didn't realize how severe the case was. So I can't remember what happened next, but... Oh, yeah, that's right. I wanted to go to trial, but then the prosecutors kept trying to get me to take the plea. And I went to court for an arraignment, and I officially, like, rejected the plea. And after that happened, the prosecutors still left it open. They still, like, urged me, like, to take the plea bargain. So then I was like, you know, what is this all about? Like, what is it that they really have on me? I want to see what they have on me. So we requested a meeting with the two prosecutors, my lawyer, me, and my mom, just to basically see what they had, what they were intending to use against me if I were to take this thing to trial. And it was basically a meeting where I just stayed mute, and they just talked and said what they had. And it was kind of funny because the supervisor prosecutor, the guy who was pretty much in charge of whether or not I was going to be indicted or not, it was funny because he was trying to come off like back in the days he used to be involved in like in protests. I can't remember exactly which organization he was involved with, but you know, he was saying, you know, back in the day he was involved and, you know, cops would come and beat them down, and that you know, he was trying to like legitimize himself and like try to make it look like you know, he's there on the same page too, when I just thought, you know, this guy's a complete sellout. You know, at one point he's talking about, yeah, protesting, doing, you know, progressive work in the community. Next moment, you know, he's prosecuting someone who would have been, you know, right there standing next to him doing the same work he was doing. I mean, so my opinion was him, and he was just a complete sellout. I mean, that was just my opinion, but so they were just talking to me, and they just showed me these pictures of what they say was like a Molotov cocktail, which was complete BS, which I thought. And they showed me, I can't remember what other papers they had, but they were telling me, like, they pretty much admitted to packeting my line because they had said that they had been monitoring my AOL Instant Messenger conversations, that they didn't have logs that they had seized from my computers, but they were actually monitoring the conversations, and they would reference to certain conversations I was having online. They were like, well, we have this and this, and we have this and this. And so it was, I mean, they pretty much admitted in saying that, like, they had been monitoring my internet activity. So, basically, I mean, they just sat there, and they just talked to me. I mean, they just gave me this, you know, this BS, like, this, like, BS speech about, like, how, you know, he used to be involved back in the day, and, like, how, like, I shouldn't really go to trial because I could be facing, you know, 2 to 3 years in prison, and that I should take a plea because I didn't want to go to prison, and this isn't something I wanted to risk over. So after that, I still wanted to go to the trial, but they were still urging me to take the plea. So, I mean, there was some, like, legal limbo going back and forth. Like, at one point I decided, you know, just forget it. I'll just take the plea and get this over with. 1 month in jail, you know, 5 months community confinement compared to, like, 3 years, whatever. I just want to get this thing over with. It's been so long drawn out by now. But then I decided, you know, screw this. Like, I want to go to a trial. So it was just, like, back and forth. Like, I couldn't really decide what I wanted to do. So then after that for a while, we found out that a terrorism enhancement was applicable to what I was being charged with. And what that was something that it's based on the judge's decision to add an additional 20 years to my sentence. And that was pretty much used to, like, try and get me to get me into taking the plea so I wouldn't take this to trial. I mean, it was funny because this wasn't brought up until, like, I wanted to go to trial, until, like, I kept refusing their plea bargain. So after that, I was like, you know, if it's going to be 20 years, I might as well just take a plea. 1 month in jail versus 20 years. I wasn't in the mood for martyring myself or anything like that. I just wanted to, you know, get this thing over with. So we went to court to enter the plea bargain before the judge. And, you know, basically, I was supposed to, you know, he was supposed to accept it that day, and, you know, everything was going to move on, but the
this
judge...
is Judge Wilson.
Yeah, Judge Stephen V. Wilson. We went to court, and the judge, like, immediately was, like, against the plea. He said that anyone who posts information to the website, anyone who posts any type of information related to explosives to the internet should serve at least 12 months in prison. And he was just going off about, like, you know, this doesn't buy him, like, a free ticket. Like, just because he's young doesn't buy him a free ticket. I couldn't remember exactly what he said, but we're going to be ordering the transcripts of that hearing.
You know, isn't there a number of people on the web, on the internet, who publish this type of information?
Yeah, I mean, you can find this type of information anywhere. I mean, the stuff that was on Raise the Fist, which was actually linked to another site which was hosted by Raise the Fist, the information on there was just like, I mean, you could find 10 times more information on any other website. You can go to, I mean, there's thousands of websites out there where you can find information on how to build explosives, how to use explosives. I mean, you can go to howthingswork.com and type in the keyword explosives, and you can find out how to make everything from dynamite to grenades to, you know, high-powered explosives. I mean, it's just, you can find out how to do so much stuff. You know, if someone wanted to really make explosives and use them for, you know, something illegal, they wouldn't rely on raceofist.com. They would go to a website where that information is much more readily available and much more detailed.
Also, the information, not only is it readily available, but by the way they went about going after Sherman is more proof that they specifically wanted him and the website down. Because, like he said, it was hosted, he was just hosting a website for someone else. The FBI has interrogated this person, has talked to them, and he hasn't had one charge brought against him. And it was his website that was holding all of this information. All he had was basically a link from his site to that site, which had all that information. But he hasn't been touched, basically. And we're friends with that guy, so it's not to say, like, it was his fault, because or that we want him to get screwed over in this process either, but, like, the fact remains that Sherman is a young black male growing up in this country, and this boy was a white guy growing up in Orange County with, like, really rich parents who probably would have not let him be touched, you know? And the FBI interrogated him, and he voluntarily spoke to them, but Sherman's the one that went down for this. Specifically, that brings it around more to it being about the specific site. And by the FBI's own admittance, they've been watching him since he was 13, 14 years old. They have information on him.
It's not even just about the site, it's about Sherman.
It's about Sherman, and it's about... They viewed him, in their own words, as a man on a mission. And by, like, the court's own documents that I have here, and this is the present... The pre-sentence and the recommendations that the prosecution actually had on him. And it says specifically, before the court is a 20-year-old male with his second criminal conviction, the first one being Mayday. The defendant is an anarchist and has been involved in a number of protests against institutions such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. And these were justifications, one of the first justifications that's listed here on why they went after him and raided his house and are holding him liable for these allegations. They specifically wanted, if it was about the information being out there, why would they not take down... Why would they not go after the person that originally posted them and put the reclaim guide up?
Absolutely.
They went after him because they wanted him down to be scared and not go after this. And second, they wanted the site down. They wanted the site shut down.
Now, it's clear that this was a politicized trial, and this was targeting, from what I've read in the papers and the reports and some of the publications, that this is about the politics. This is about you being an anarchist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just to read a quote from the judge, Wilson said, "This should be looked at with more of a deterrence outcome to future revolutionaries wanting to act in a similar manner." And this was in court.
Yeah, he said that in court. I mean, he made it obvious that this was about politics. This wasn't about posting information related to explosives to the internet. This was specifically about persecuting someone simply because they're an anarchist.
I have some questions here that people are asking, and I'm just going to throw them out and Feel free to answer the ones that you want to answer and don't answer the ones that you don't. One question is there any validity to the charges that you hacked and defaced websites?
No, they never provided any of that information.
Hold on a second. I'm sorry. Sherman is about the specific guilt or not guilt of specific actions. He's not allowed to, or he's advised not to speak on them, specifically because he's already signed this plea and he's been sentenced. So if it gets into dicey on the things he pled guilty or didn't plead guilty to, it can make the plea bargain valid or not valid. So that's something we don't really want to touch right now.
What about the issue of, somebody asked, was it the actions considered sedition?
Were the actions considered what?
Seditious. That's a, I believe it's a legal term, which is, you know, basically, basically means that your interests are in seditious activity to overthrow the government of the United States. Or did they ever use the word sedition?
They used, I remember in the arrest affidavit, they used, I can't remember exactly word for word, but they were making reference to the fact that the information was posted to the website with the intent that it would be used to used as self-defense against, you know, police if they happen to attack demonstrators, and to be used to interrupt meetings of international and foreign commerce. In other words, interrupt World Bank meetings and IMF.
Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry, just to add to that, one of the other things, and this was really bizarre. During the time that this was going on, it was right before and like during the Olympics in Salt Lake City, Utah, and Sherman had posted a link on his website regarding some protests that were going to be going on in Salt Lake City in regards to all the homeless people that were kicked out of the city and picked up and dumped in the forest due to the Olympics. So he had a link on there saying, you know, go to these protests, various protests. One of the things that they used in court and accused him of the day of the raid in New York was that he on his way back from New York to California, he was going to stop by the Olympics and try to blow it up. Those were their exact words. They're accusing him of this. And that was one of the treasonous things he was being blamed for, on top of them continuously asking him if he wanted to see the president dead or et cetera, things like that.
Okay. One other question is in court, what was the response to the fact that information is already clearly and widely distributed?
The response from the judge, or?
I'm assuming in court, what was the response by the prosecution to the fact that information is already clearly and widely distributed?
Yeah, that was actually never brought up in court.
Because it didn't go to trial.
I never went to trial.
Okay. All right.
In a huge sense, like, this was kind of, I guess, discussed a little bit earlier today on KPFK, but there was, and this is not to come down on his federal public defender, but it was a huge railroading as far as they were constantly put in front of him and his family that he was facing 20 years and a $250,000 fine if he was to take this to trial and be found guilty, and he didn't have a chance. In a whole lot of different ways, this we can sit here and say if it had gone to trial, a lot of these questions that people are asking would have come out. And it's one of the reasons they can't really be answered is because there wasn't a chance to go to trial, and a plea bargain had to be taken. So people can take that information and read the stuff that's online and read the different various interviews that were done before this event and find out a lot more about this case that are talked about in them.
Sherman, how do you feel about what's your feeling right now about all this?
I don't know. At some level, I'm not really surprised about what's going on. I mean, just because I guess I've come to realize like that's the nature of this government. Like, I'm not surprised that they're gonna come out and, you know, basically persecute people for trying to exercise their First Amendment right. I mean, they've been doing that ever since this government was founded. I mean, we can talk about how our rights are being stripped away because of the Patriot Act. The fact is our rights have already been stripped away. The Patriot Act, I think, is just them coming out in public and saying, all right, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and this time we're not going to be sneaky about it. We're going to do it right in front of your face, and that way we're going to intimidate you even more than what we've been doing before. So I think that, I mean, in that sense, it's not surprising to me at all, especially based on the judge's remarks from the past hearings, that he wanted to give me at least 12 months in jail, that he wanted to set an example for future revolutionaries. I mean, that he pretty much wanted to do nothing but, you know, set an example. That was his whole purpose for giving me a 12-month sentence in prison, was to set an example. So, I mean, it's completely outrageous, I think. At the same time, I'm not surprised that it's happening, because this has been going on, I mean, ever since this country was founded. This government has stayed on its path. It stayed on its continuous path of just basic war, whether or not that war has been waged, you know, overseas in other countries or right here at home. This government has, you know, was founded with the agenda to sustain itself through war, to sustain itself by enforcing its own interests and its own policies, you know, by any means necessary through any means it can. I mean, it's, some people will look at this and they'll be shocked, like, how can this be happening? I mean, don't we have democracy in this country? Don't we have freedom of speech? Well, if you look back in history, I mean, we really never had freedom of speech. I mean, they came here, I mean, they pretty much, you know, they came here, they founded this country on, you know, the genocide of an entire native culture. I mean, first they wipe out, you know, one culture. Then, you know, they enslave the blacks, they take the blacks from Africa, use them to build up, you know, their basic, you know, the basic foundation, the basic infrastructure of this capitalist empire, you know, and then they continue the manifestation, you know, of their imperialist and, you know, plutocratic agenda. And, you know, it's just been a continuous war. And I think today it's even worse than what it used to be, because today, you know, things like racism, you know, which played a very, you know, major role, and I think in the foundation of this country, is it still exists. Some people will say, you know, today, you know, racism in the government, racism in this country has, you know, been dealt with, it's been conquered, it's not as bad as it used to be. But the fact is that today it's expressed in, you know, much more covert themes, and it exists in, you know, in a vast network of, you know, a racist empire. It exists in a vast network of white supremacy. And I think what they try to do is that just continues to manifest, and they try to use things like, you know, the Patriot Act to try and stop terrorists, to, you know, protect freedom when they go in and invade Iraq. You know, what was the operation called? Operation, you know, Liberation, or Operation Freedom or something like that.
Originally, it was Operation Iraqi Freedom, or Oil, Operation, yeah. Iraqi Liberation.
Operation.
They changed it.
Yeah. I mean, they use these terms, and they use this terminology to try and legitimize the falsehood of American patriotism. They use these terms to try and, I think, legitimize the falsehood of white supremacy, the very things that have founded this country. They're trying to continue those and trying to use those sort of as a cover to try and, you know, give them justification for continuing, you know, just continuing their all-out war. I mean, this is a government that relies on war in order to sustain its own infrastructure, in order to sustain, you know, its own, you know, global empire, and the way it continues to police the world and, you know, control the world, you know, in any way it can. So, you know, if anything, this is the type of, you know, repression I would expect from a government that has only been around for 200 years, but has proven itself and shown itself to be the most violent government in the history of, you know, in the history of mankind. I mean, when they're going to persecute people for, you know, being anarchists or being communists or being socialists, or whether they're going to go after people, you know, simply because of the color of their skin, I mean, it's just a further manifestation of what this country was founded on, I think, and that's, you know, basically, you know, the basic principles of greed and capitalism and white supremacy and, you know, the basic fundamental principles of empire, and that's power.
And here you have the Bush administration violating international law, invading a country, using the most violent means to, you know, take over an entire people.
Exactly.
And then here we're talking about, you know, a kid with a website having some links. And you put this in context, and it's just outrageous.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And it's not unbelievable, actually, but it's outrageous. And the hypocrisy that these people can talk about nonviolence and then, you know, like you say, be one of the most violent institutions in history.